Welcome to the Friday Workplace Briefing. Workplace law changes so quickly. Tune in weekly to find out how the law is changing and what you need to do.
G'day, Nina. How are you?
Good, thanks, Andrew. How are you?
Time's ticking, Nina.
Oh, gosh.
2 weeks, final fitting done.
I know. Well, no, I think it's on Monday.
Final fitting for wedding dress.
Final pick up. But I feel like we're just constantly running. Kim had a very deserved holiday this week, but I think we need her back.
We need her back. Kim, if you're out there, come home.
Please.
Now, funnily enough, one of our favourite restaurant chains that we do go to, Din Tai Fung, is in the media for all the wrong reasons.
I know. They falsified payroll records. And
underpaid.
Yeah, yeah. But it was really bad. So they got fined $3.89 million, but the HR manager directly got slapped with a $100,000 fine and the general manager $92,000. And that was because, unlike a lot of other cases where you could kind of say, oh, the HR was separate, she's the one who directed the payroll officer to make two sets of records to hide like cash payments, to deliberately underreport on how much cash was being paid. So she was the nefarious person behind.
And look, that's interesting, isn't it? We've said before that HR managers and safety managers need to stand tall in what is right, and they need to register their disapproval of things that are wrong. Here's a case where that didn't happen, and look where you end up. That's not only a $100,000 fine, it's never be employed again. That's one of the difficulties about it, is that everyone's going to read that brand and you're damaged. I guess that brings us to another case which we haven't got on our list today, which is the Marist
Youth Care Limited.
Yeah, and this is a problem, and we act for a number of aged and youth care clients. One of the major problems is what people experience as employees from the clientele, but also the willingness to allow behaviours between employees to not be good and to be bad as well. That happened in this case. I think it was 2019. There was a review done.
Well, I think there was just a huge history of really inappropriate, violent action, sexual harassment, sexual assault even by clients to staff. And in 2019, two females came forward and made complaints and management didn't do very much about it at all. And so they've now been slapped with a $300,000 fine.
Been slapped with it. slapped with a $300,000 fine.
But I think it's just the same kind of thread with what we've been talking about all the time, that if there is extremely high risk, known risk, then you have to have controls, irrespective if it's an excursion for a school or if you're in a care centre where you know that there is a high risk of clients acting in this way.
Oh, look, even if you're running a pie stall at a footy club, do you know what I mean? you know,
That's
there's
a very random example.
Look, the other day I was at a restaurant and I saw, at the time I was sitting there, two or three customers behave in really poor ways to young staff members. So it was a risk. It's a known risk not to have a position. And by the way, the staff went back. You could see they were complaining and nothing happened.
Mm.
And you think, A, you burn the kid, but then secondly, you legitimise the behaviour and there is no prevention. I mean, those people should have been asked to leave.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's an example. This is the beginning of a whole series of cases around this. Can I say in aged care, this is a huge problem that exists? And also in those institutions where you're inclined to have people of various skills and various cultures coming to work there who are not aware of the protections they're entitled to and often treated very poorly, I think this is a real shot across the bows. A bit like the slap, this is a shot across the bows. Maybe we'll go into our first case now, okay? And we've got two cases that are coming up where undertakings have been provided. So we're going to talk briefly about IAG and then we're going to talk about another case whose name
is... It was On the Run.
On the Run. What I want you to notice in both cases is the nature of the undertaking was significantly greater for organisations who don't report and actually resist a process.
Yeah.
So let's start off with IAG.
Who self-reported.
Self-reported $21 million of underpayments and $16 million of long service leave that wasn't paid. They participated in everything that occurred. They were required to pay $650,000 to the Consolidated Fund for the Commonwealth, plus a variety of other stuff, which probably made the total enforceable undertaking around about $1 million. Bad happened because of a flawed payroll system, governance system that sits around payroll. Can I just say how often does that happen?
So often.
Particularly with changes in laws, changes in awards where it requires updating an amendment. Interesting case.
Please do your audits.
Yeah.
It would catch these issues.
But I think the really big case is the next one.
Yeah, On the Run.
Yeah, which is such an appropriate name, isn't it?
Yeah, they did not self-report. Fair Work Ombudsman got multiple complaints and inquiries from employees. So they did their own audit and visited about 15 sites and realised there was huge underpayments going on that the organisation had no idea about. I think it was like
1.3 million,
yeah. And then, so not as big as the other one, but they ended up signing a $2.5 million undertaking.
Oh, correct that, a 2.3.
Sorry.
I don't know if we can get on the upside of this, but I read it 10 minutes ago. So 2.3, but I guess this is our point. So you're faced with a choice when you underpay. Do you self-report? Do you quarantine and pay? Or do you just wait to get caught? So the middle is quarantining, paying people going forwards and making sure that past people have been paid. But if it's triggered, then the Fair Work Ombudsman penalties are going to rise, including undertakings will be an alternative,
yep.
Is to give an undertaking. The choice is to report or not to report. What you're going to see is when you have a significant underpayment, it is a significantly better thing to self-report,
yes,
than to not self-report.
Yeah, we've seen that with all the unis.
Yeah, so yeah. Look, interesting set of cases. Probably, can I say, not as interesting as some as the case.
Wait, but before we move on, Andrew, I think we should talk about some of the consequences, though, of enforceable undertakings if it were to happen again.
Yes.
So if they were to have another underpayment, just like in enforceable undertakings in safety, it's evidence that you were well aware of your obligations and you're more likely to get charges of, what is it called, significant, the Fair Work Act, the Fair Work Ombudsman.
Whatever it is, the one that takes you to
jail. Yeah, the one that the really...
I was relying on you. But the bottom line is, once you're aware of it and the officer group are aware of it,
yeah.
If you re-offend at that stage, you have an awareness and knowledge of what you're doing.
And officers are on the line at that
and
stage.
And that's jail. But you're under the Wage Inspector for Long Service Leave, significant jail up to 10 years. And the Fair Work Ombudsman, I've forgotten what the Fair Work Act, again, significant fines, but also jail terms under the change in the legislation. So once you give an enforceable undertaking, don't take your eyes off the ball.
Mm.
All right. Comcare in the Department of Justice, psychological hazard prosecution?
Yeah, a new one. So this is different to the one that we all know about with the RIR worker. So this was, they've kept the details very close to the chest, but it sounds like the Department of Defence failed to monitor the health and well-being of an employee. And
working remote. And look, this is a remote, on a remote barracks.
Yeah.
This is a classic issue that arises for a whole lot of us with people who work remotely.
Yeah, I think that's why it's really interesting, because not only did they not do like regular check-in to check on the behaviour, but purposely he was working very remote and had no contact with his immediate supervisor. And that seems to be the real sticking point, which has caused him psychological harm. I think it's the first time they've actually focused kind of remoteness.
Yeah, it is. And I guess what we've seen is we have four layers of prosecution. So we have prosecutions that sit where there is egregiously bad behaviour, easy.
Yeah, like bullying and harassment.
Yeah, we have prosecutions that then sit where you've got
Excessive workloads,
that type of thing. But then when you come down to these other things, then you have the performance type issues, the VBA, the Victorian Building Authority prosecution. But then you come down to the lower end of this stuff, a sense of isolation or being left alone.
Yeah.
And it does have an enormous impact, you know. But isn't it interesting, as we go down over the last 2 years, we've seen egregiously bad behaviour moving down to through bullying, moving down again to performance management, and now we're down to this level. Can I say psychological hazards has landed?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think this one is a one to pay attention to, because all of us in some way or another have people who are working remotely at some point in time. And if you can't ensure that they are safe, like if you've got no way to connect, how do you know that they're not being impacted by the remote work?
Yep.
And it's something that we all forget. You know, sometimes I'm working from home, head down, so super concentrating, and I forget to check in on other people because I'm so engrossed.
Yeah.
And we're all guilty of it.
I know. Well, you tell me how guilty I am when I'm unavailable and Nina's chasing me and then I can hear her stress 2 hours later, where were you? Imagine being days. We've got a lot to get through.
Yeah.
So let's go on to safety trumping discrimination.
Oh, yeah.
This is the Beard case.
Yes, that's right. It was in Tasmania. So they determined that they were allowed to give a direction for employees to be clean shaven so that it could properly fit the respiratory mask. And the union objected and said it wasn't reasonable. And as we know, safety trumped
discriminate. Really easy stuff. So facial hair and things can fit into some discriminant. Like, it's a pretty poor argument from them in Tasmania, which doesn't actually have an attribute. But anyway, here in Victoria, it would. Okay, you could say that it's a physical feature, so therefore it's discrimination. Whatever the case, safety will also always beat discrimination, and that's a very simple example of it.
Yeah, it was just a fun case.
Why don't we go on to threats against contract renewal?
Oh, yeah, this is the University of Melbourne.
Yeah.
They got fined almost $80,000 because of adverse action against two casual academics. So the way that it worked is they were on rolling contracts before the new changes came into place, and under each of their contracts it said there was an anticipated amount of hours it would take for them to do lecturing, tutoring, a whole bunch of stuff that academics do, don't know what they do. And what I think two of them complained and said, look, they needed more time to complete their duties. I think they only requested an extra 5 hours more than the anticipated. And their supervisor or manager said, if you make that request, you will not get another contract renewal. And used that to complain to other people and said, we're never hiring them again. I don't know how or why they decided to go all the way with this case.
It's a hard one to understand, isn't it? This is sort of the dumb and dumber test.
Very, very clearly the case that it was a breach of general protections.
Okay. I think we just tell that case it's fun, really. That's the but also because the new rules around contractors, that there will be this temptation to push casuals.
Yeah.
And the answer is all they had to do was do a proper assessment and say no. That's all they had to do.
Yeah, I think really the key thing is there is this idea that if someone's a casual or if someone's on a fixed-term contract, then you can always very easily get rid of them if you don't like them for some reason. But if you don't have objective evidence to set out your reason and they've made complaints and things like that, it's a reverse onus of proof. So it's going to be very difficult.
And when you're as dumb as that, like, you got it. Anyway, look, I want to go on the next case because I reckon this is probably one of the more important cases we've had this year.
Yeah.
And it's on the meaning of redundancy and the needs to seek alternative
redeployment
under all circumstances. So this is Helensburgh Coal case, where a number of people were said to be made redundant. 22 of them said, well, wait a second, there's other jobs we could do here. And so the question was put as a live question, just because I don't actually have the skills, or maybe there's barriers, or maybe the jobs aren't just there right at this moment, are they things that can properly be taken into consideration as to whether redeployment, whether this is a genuine redundancy, and whether under all the circumstances appropriate measures are taken. This is an incredibly broad definition, and it sits at odds with a number of other cases. So
yeah,
this is a case I suspect should be appealed, if that makes sense, because it's one that needs to get in front of the High Court. But if we accept what this court said, which is, no, when you look at someone's genuine redundancy, it's not your obligation to retrain them and remove all the barriers to get another job. It's not your obligation to find a job that doesn't exist but may exist in 2 or 3 weeks' time. That's not your responsibility.
Well,
what the full federal court said is actually it is.
Yeah. And so to provide a bit more context, they were claiming that they should have been able to be redeployed into jobs that the company had been using contractors for.
Yeah.
So the question of whether they could be trained to fill those roles or the fact that the roles weren't available right now, could they still be replacing those roles?
Yeah, and I think this is going to be a live issue in a whole lot of places who have mixed methods of employment. A really interesting case, I think, for Nina and I, as we look at the structure of our redundancy process, this is a bit broader than we would have expected it to land. So it's a bit of a warning out there as you come to it. Look now at who are you employing? Are the roles comparable roles? Are they roles with a little bit of training you could do? Do you have rights of dismissal over casual employers or contractors to fill them? You're going to need to think about it. Actually, what it really needs is when you look at your selection and the process you go through and the weighting of the different factors in redundancy, it's going to have to be part of that grid of factors you take in.
I think there needs to be evidence now is what it's saying. Otherwise, you can't just say, no, there's no possibility.
Yeah, so when we get to the matrix and you stick those columns in, you're going to have to start looking more broadly before you start drafting what are the criteria.
Yeah.
I think that's something we'll come to grips with pretty quickly, but for a lot of people who try and do it on the fly, they may find themselves caught out. All right, contractor case. This case is by Deputy President Roberts, and it's wrong. So I just thought I'd start pretty early on this one. Wow. It will probably be right with the new law that's come through, which gets rid of personnel computing. Yep. But the decision is wrong. The decision says you are meant to look at the contract, but I don't have to do that. I can actually look at the conduct that comes afterwards if it's incompatible with the contract, which is a broad stretch from what personnel in the other case have said, JAMSEC. I think what he should have done, which was open, is to look at the very controlling mechanisms that existed in the contract, which is you will work these hours, there will be rosters, there will be those things, and said, when I look at this, although the name is independent contract, this is clearly an employment contract in the level of direction and control. And if he had said that, he was on the money. Mm. But instead of that, he lurched into the multifactorial test and looking at conduct that came afterwards, which he was not permitted to do under the High Court case.
Yeah, he's just a little bit early.
Yeah, jumped the gun. Anyway, look, fascinating case because, once again, it just shows you, even with established High Court law, how wrong things can go. The bottom line is, please don't try and be too smart by half. I know that's my father's expression.
It's like your favourite saying.
Well, it is. I think Dad was right about it. When you've got a contractor, if they're not a contractor, don't call them it. Don't try and do things which don't look real, because if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, and whatever else ducks do, it's a duck, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, we're on to our main topic. And I guess we've got a couple of cases, but there is a specific case that's come out on this recently which talked about bullying, and I think it's Ted Marsh and Aspire too, isn't it?
Yes.
Or is that the...
No. Application by Brinkworth.
It's application by Brinkworth. Sorry, that's my mistake. So in application by Brinkworth, there was a person who started work, had some skills, was repeatedly given work beneath their skills.
Yeah, and trained in stuff they already knew. Yeah, like weird micromanagement.
Yeah. Well, that's the version that we hear, I guess, to be perfectly honest. Even when on leave, she was given other people to supervise her who were suppliers. Yeah. And there was some behaviour which was blunt. Now, the evidence came out in the case that the actual supervisor did have some really good reasons as to why that occurred. So that controversial evidence, we can wash that away. What it came down to is the nature of the persistent conduct and the bluntness in which the orders were given was beyond what you would expect would be reasonable. And the question is, was it bullying? So was it repeated behaviour? Yes. Would it affect a reasonable person? Would it hurt, humiliate or not? I think the answer is here. They're saying no, she was a particularly sensitive person, it wasn't quite at that level. Mm-hmm. And finally, did it affect their safety at work? Well, it did affect her safety at work, but the second test, the objective test, is what it didn't pass. So the court held, or the Fair Work held, that this was not bullying, but went to this issue of context. And I think that's the big issue, isn't it?
That's so important, yeah.
The fact is, if we work in an environment where Nina and I swear all the time and are aggressive in the manner in which we deal, so long as I'm not aggressive at Nina and the language is vulgar language, it's all sorts of things, but we use it all the time, it ain't going to be bullying. In fact, it ain't going to be anything because it's condoned and permitted. And so
under fair work.
So the issue, but if I change that language, so if I say, oh, that person was an idiot, you know, bloody idiot, blah, 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 not language I should use. But if I say to Nina, you're a bloody idiot, all of a sudden I've changed from a generic language to something which is hurtful. Hmm. I'm afraid even though the language is the same, the nature of harm makes it a psychological hazard. The moment it becomes a psychological habit, it ticks the second box of what is bullying. It could hurt, humiliate or intimidate because it's a psychological hazard. Yep. And then you're racing towards bullying, okay?
But, Andrew, isn't it true that it also, yes, context, but also depends on that person, right? So if you're aware that something particularly was sensitive to them and in the context people make jokes but you made something that could still be considered bullying.
Absolutely.
In that context.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Because remember, if we just break the criteria down again, was it a repetitive action?
Yes,
it was. The objective test in the second part, would it hurt, humiliate, intimidate, was it unreasonable, goes to the eggshell skull. Mm-hmm. So it goes to the person you're doing it to if it relates to them. So not if I'm just talking out here, but if I say to you, Nina, green coats, I hate green coats, and I know that you feel very sensitive about green coats, I just chose
this
that today.
This is left to me by my grandma.
Yeah, that's right. And I say, no one would wear their grandmother's coat. Anyway, but my point about it is the moment you direct it at somebody, then the eggshell skull comes in, then you take the person as you find them and therefore it is unreasonable per se and you have bullying. And it's sort of, can I just say, it sort of doesn't matter except for the jurisdiction of bullying, whether it's bullying, because whatever it is, all of that was misconduct.
Yeah.
Okay. The behaviour, that nature of that behaviour could never be reasonable management. So workers' compensation.
Would apply regardless.
The Fair Work Act, anything that's discriminatory, all of the law is in play. You don't have to bully to be in trouble.
Yes.
And I guess that's what I want to take out of this, that is when people act badly, contextually or not, if it's something that's always done, then someone needs to draw a line in the sand and say stop it.
Yeah.
And make it thereafter misconduct.
Yeah.
Because at the moment you've got condonation, so there is no misconduct.
Yeah.
The moment you say it's misconduct, then follow through. But the moment it's directed at somebody, it's misconduct simpliciter. It is just misconduct. It is wrong. It is harmful. Yeah. And it must be dealt with, okay? And unfortunately, in this loose environment, this contextual environment where people are rude, too often they will make comments about a person or something in that jocular way, which does hurt the person and is directed at them. And I'm afraid at that stage you take the person as you find them.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for today on that. Let's go on to the case study.
So Cam was a boner in a meat processing business that exported to Japan. The business was called Clean Pack Meats. CM, the Japanese client's meat hygiene and handling rules included an absolute ban on employees from vendors having facial hair. The rules relied on scholarly research that showed even in the best meatworks, with proper hair restraints, the transmission of foodborne disease was higher than environments which insisted on clean-shaven employees shave within the last 7 days. The nature of the fine automated Wagyu cutting machines place employees' face close to the gearing of the cutting machine.
I just want to choose your favourite meat, that's all.
Although the machines were guarded, hair is fine and there was a small chance if hair was very long, it could lead to accidental entanglement. Cam had a heavy growth of facial hair. If he didn't shave, he had the beginnings of a beard within 7 days. His foreman, Trev, was not a man to mince words. Sorry for the pun. So cheesy. He regularly told Cam he needed a shave. It was not a gentle reminder, but it is difficult for Cam as he had sensitive skin. If he shaved more than once a week, his skin would become dry, scaly, and hurt. Cam tried to explain that dry, scaly skin was as big a risk as a beard, so lay off him. He would shave once a week. Trev was relentless, called him the gorilla, spoke frequently at toolbox meetings, and pointed to Cam, saying words like, "Don't be an ape, be a man, shave." Cam spoke to Chen Hayden and also to the ops manager, Diane. He explained the constant behaviour of Trev was unwelcome, hurtful, embarrassing, and explained his health condition and the risk of overshaving. He gave them a medical report, very brief, explaining his contentions and saying he was fit to work if he shaved once a week. Diane and Jen checked with head of food handling and hygiene, who said 7 days was the absolute limit. Reassured, they all walked away. Diane spoke to Trev and advised him of the rule. Trev didn't give up. He watched him, kept asking what day he was up to and shaving. After 4 weeks, Cam felt anxious, unwell, and distressed.
Why are you being so tough? Cam's distressed and you're laughing.
Yeah, but it's funny knowing someone's watching how long he's in between shaves. He saw his doctor, who said he was suffering from a virus and had depression and anxiety caused by his treatment at work. He took 4 days off. He gave him a certificate to that effect. When returned to work, Trev confronted him. He said it was 6 days ago, no shave before you went away. Now you have been away a total of 5 more days. That is 11 days without a shave, and you have willfully and deliberately disobeyed a lawful direction. You are to attend Diane's office at 2 p.m. today to show cause why your employment should not be terminated. Cam said, "I will save you the trouble. I'm going home and left work." Gosh, if we ever get a case like this, I probably wouldn't stop laughing.
All right, poor Cam. I hope he doesn't come to us. All right, one, has Cam resigned?
No, it's one of the heat of the moment things. They've got to check.
I know we're doing this a couple of weeks in a row just to remind people. Mm. So not a resignation. If he comes in tomorrow, you'd be kind to him, generous, see what he wants to do, but you wouldn't accept him.
Like it could be if you checked and he said, I did want it. The key is to check. Yeah.
And by the way, if he did say, you've got a shocking constructive dismissal running at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so be aware of that. Did Cam commit an act of serious misconduct in not shaving? Could he be safely terminated?
So stupid.
What do you reckon, Matt?
Well, technically, it's a breach of lawful and I don't know if it's lawful. I don't think it was a reasonable direction, though. I don't think they did enough consultation with him about the safety stuff.
I'll tell you what I reckon. I reckon it's a lawful and reasonable direction. Wait for it, but I'm going to come back to it.
Okay.
So lawful and reasonable direction. I think it's also under Regulation 107 brings the business into risk. So it's There's two bases upon, but the problem is, yes, it's a valid reason.
I think it's harsh.
Yeah, but it's harsh, and it's harsh because the guy's just gone off because you've hurt him.
Yeah.
And he's probably not thought about it. What he should have been is sent home to have a shave.
Well, I also feel like they could have implemented other controls, and there's been no consultation about any of that. So I don't think it is that reasonable.
Yeah, well, we just the other controls isn't actually part of this.
So yeah, well, don't make we it should hard. Have written them in.
Miss Safety, just leave it alone, me.
As Cam bullied, like I'm being bullied right now.
Yes, he was. Thank you for that. Do Tram
and Cam have safety issues, and if so, what?
If Cam should die from pressure placed on him by the business, what would be the safety consequences? So does Cam have a safety issue? Small one about not shaving, not a problem. Okay, he's not going to be prosecuted. Does Trev and CM, which is I think that what's meant to be, the business, have really big issues in safety?
Yeah.
They have very, very significant issues around safety and would be prosecuted on the psychological hazards behaviour that exists. Mm. And I think Trev under these circumstances unquestionably would be. This is sort of the
reckless endangerment.
Yeah, this is the sort of Victorian Building Authority gone wild, if that makes sense. Yeah, it's the next stage on. So I guess one of the reasons I drafted this case is to show where psychological hazards is going. This is behaviour which we know exists in a whole lot of organisations where a supervisor gets it in for someone and treats them badly, and where for a long time people have gone, oh, it's just a personality clash. Well, this case shows it's not just a personality clash. This is one where Trev could be in jail and the organisation could be facing massive fines.
Yeah, and I think it's also an example of when they're using what is technically a lawful thing but using it in an unreasonable manner.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we spoke about in our main topic. But it's very easy when you're frustrated with someone to use any kind of excuse to focus on them. But remember, workers' comp lawyers, if it's not reasonable management action, you're still going
to
lose.
Okay, well, then I'll get to the next question.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all right. You answer any question you like. Okay, can we have the next question, please, Sam?
Oh, it's not Cam the next question.
No, you actually jumped to it. Does Cam have a good general protection claim? Yes, he does. He's raised the concern and was treated badly afterwards.
And went on leave as well.
Yeah, does Cam have a good workers' compensation claim? What do you think?
No, I don't know. Yeah,
Does Cam under Kozarov's case, so faced with constant attacks, ones that, fantastic common law claim and fatal accidents claim if he was to die.
Yeah, and that's
there you
it.
Go. And we're on time, as always.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Nana. And are you back next week?
No, I'm going to ask him to do it.
It's good that I know. Anyway, see you later. Thumbs up.
Bye,
and thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Thank you.